Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on bad words, right after this. You know, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. Government gets 60%. That's $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just kind of real special? Now, if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year, and you're going to net about 25%, and the government will net 75%. Now, that means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more. That's an 8% increase in your take-home pay, and that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. So you work twice as hard, produce twice as much, and out of the 100% more that you produced, you get 8% of it? Government gets 92% of that increase? There ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners, which is where you're at $100,000 a year, and then only net 25% of it? Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information. It answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much for so little received. And let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct 417-273-4967, or you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Remember, my Tax and Status School is available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. Get a call right now before you forget. Remember that number again, 417-273-4967. Who determines what is or is not proper speech? Who determines what is or is not good language? Or who determines what is moral or what is immoral? You ever stop to think about that? Janet Jackson, at the Super Bowl, year before this one, bared her breast on national television. And it caused such a shock to America's moral fiber and the moral majority, that it generated hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of fines against the network and the affiliate stations that had broadcast such obscene filth and depravity into American homes. By the way, these same American homes, 75% of them, subscribe to and watch hardcore pornography. Yeah, hardcore pornography comes into 75% of American homes today. Now, when you think about that, 65% of Americans go to church every Sunday. You know, if you take 65% of Americans that go to church every Sunday, and then 75% of Americans watch hardcore pornography. And I want to describe this hardcore pornography for you, because I'm a plumbing contractor. I'm a general contractor. I'm a tradesman. I'm a carpenter and a plumber. And I work in the trades, worked for many years in the trades. And I'm a construction worker and a truck driver. Janet Jackson's breast did not offend me at all, but I was in a motel one time and I turned on the hardcore pornography channel. And you want to keep in mind that the second largest source of revenue in a motel or hotel is the pornography that they pipe into your room. The biggest source of revenue, of course, is renting you the room. Then the second biggest source of revenue that the motel makes is off of the pornography. It's a multi-billion dollar a year industry in the United States. And 75% of Americans watch this. I watched it for about 15 minutes, and I was so disgusted when I got into it, I shut it off, and I said, my God, I can't believe that people actually would watch that. But then I guess it's because I'm a prude, I guess as they would say, you know. I don't match up to pulpit parrot and church lady, so I guess I'm a prude, you'd say. Now, Howard Stern is on the other end of the spectrum over there. Anything goes. I mean, you can use the F word or the MF word or whatever it is you want to use. And there doesn't seem to be any sensibility on the one extreme, or there doesn't seem to be any end of the prudery on the other extreme. And so I thought I'd ask the question, well, where is there a middle ground? What would the Bible, what would God, what would Jesus of Nazareth consider middle ground in this culture war over dirty words or bared breasts or hardcore pornography? Would Jesus rent a room at the Holiday Inn and then turn on the porn channel and watch pornography? Would Jesus use four-letter words? I think most people would say, well, no, he wouldn't watch pornography, and no, he wouldn't use four-letter words. Well, has anybody ever looked in the Bible to find out what Jesus would do? I kind of found a couple of exceptions to the rule here, and I thought I'd share them with you. So I have to warn you that the following program contains adult material. Listener discretion is advised. So let me just begin the discussion with, where did you learn your morality? You think back and you say, well, I went to Sunday school, or I went to church and I learned morality there. Or maybe it was mom and dad, or maybe it was Aunt Bessie and my granny. That's where I learned English grammar, was from my granny. Well, it wasn't so much grammar as it was bad words. You see, my granny and my Aunt Bessie, God rest them both, were English teachers, and they were good English teachers, and they were really concerned about little Georgie using bad words, especially in the household where my granddad was a lumberjack. And of course, he smoked Roytan cigars, chewed Day's Work tobacco, drank Rainier beer, and Four Roses whiskey. And let me tell you that he had the language to go right along with it. And here's little Georgie, you know. This is World War II. Now my daddy's gone off to war to fight to make the world safe for communism, socialism, and democracy. And so while he was gone, I lived with Granny. Well, you know, of course, Granny was an old lady by the time I was born. Well, she must have been all of 40 or 50 years old. And as I grew up, you know, she got to be older and older. And these old ladies, you know, had ideas of propriety that didn't seem like to me to fit into the mainstream of society. Well, you know, at age 5, 6, 7, long in there. So the way they taught English was with soap. And if they would hear a bad word come out of your mouth, whatever this bad word was, and who decides what these bad words are? You know, that's another mystery. Who decides that this or that word is good or this or that word is bad? For instance, let me start off slow and easy. We used to have a word called ain't, which was a contraction for are not. You know, you are not going, or you didn't do this or you didn't do that. Well, I ain't doing it. I'm not going to do that. Well, that ain't was a bad word. Now, that ain't wasn't a word that would get your mouth washed out with soap, but it was a bad word. And contractions were looked upon with disdain. You shouldn't use words like can't. in place of cannot. So they would teach us, you know, that you know, go ahead and use the correct language, the correct words, and so on. And while they didn't have degrees, you know, my granny and my Aunt Bessie, they didn't have degrees from college and they didn't have teaching credentials. Boy, they were hot and heavy on proper speech for some reason. They just were. And of course, I would listen to Granddad and listen to the other guys, you know, out in the mill yard, and they didn't speak in the same terms that my granny and Aunt Bessie did. Aunt Bessie was an Advent and she went to church. My granny, I don't know what she was. I don't think she was anything, and I don't ever remember my granny going to church, and she'd wash her mouth out in a heartbeat. I got the cleanest mouth God ever put on the face of this earth, and my granny, she cleaned it right up, let me tell you. Well, I had a young fella in class here some time back, and he upbraided me a little. He said, why do you take God's name in vain, and why do you use these four-letter words? And I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, where did this guy get his morality? Who taught him which words were good and which words were bad? And who taught Howard Stern which words were good and which words were bad? And what about all the construction workers and longshoremen and truck drivers, you know? They have a speech. And then there's the President of the United States, you know, like Richard Nixon, you know, he had his expletives deleted. Remember that? Expletives deleted. Did he use bad words? I mean, the President of the United States, he wouldn't use bad words, would he? Well, it seems like to me that we have a lot of hypocrisy going on. Now, last night, I watched Saturday Night Live. It was on NBC, and they had the first 5 years of Saturday Night Live. Now, I can remember years ago, I used to watch Saturday Night. And they had John Belushi on there, and Dan Aykroyd, and Gilda Ratner, and so on, and Jane Curtin. And it was irreverent, and it was certainly suggestive, and it oftentimes went over the line, but I didn't see that it was filthy or dirty, not from 1976 to 1980. Now, I don't watch Saturday Night Live any longer. None of us in this family watch Saturday Night Live because it's so dirty. I mean, it offends my sensibilities. And I want to remind you, I'm a construction worker. I'm a truck driver. And if you can offend a truck driver or a construction worker, I mean, that thing's got to be pretty poor, wouldn't you think? I mean, I think that would have offended my granddad. And he wasn't any slouch. Neither was my daddy or my Uncle Carol or Uncle Buster. And, you know, those guys, you know, they when they were out on the street and they were talking to people, they'd salt up, or, you know, put a little salt and pepper into their speech and into their vocabulary. And they'd use some words. And I just wondered, are they scripturally incorrect? Well, I think on the one extreme, like the Howard Stern or the Saturday Night Live, I think that's an extreme. On the other hand, you got church lady and pulpit parrot over here who would be just very, very offended if you were to use a bad word. I remember in school, we had a girl there by the name of Judy Hartson. You probably had a Judy Hartson in your school, too. Judy Hartson was the little girl, you know, the little goody two-shoes girl. And she's the one that would always go, Remember that? It wasn't just It wasn't a gasp of horror. It was, I'm going to tell. She was a stool pigeon. She was a snitch. And if she heard anything, I mean, it could be any word that she thought was improper, she'd run in and tell Mr. Witt, who in turn would then take you into the office, and who in turn, you know, would give you some kind of punishment, like you'd lose your recess or something like that. So, where did Judy Hartson get her morality? Who taught Judy Hartson? And then we have another form of morality in America that seems to come from our government. We send our children to public schools, and they teach them sex education in public schools and alternative lifestyles, and they fund abortions, and and they issue marriage licenses. Now, if I can remember years ago, I did a marriage up in Iowa. And this young fella and his bride wanted to marry without a state marriage license, and they wanted somebody that could perform the ceremony for them. Not that it requires anybody of any special intellect to do a marriage. It's no big deal, but I went up there to do it for him because, see, a licensed preacher can't marry you. See, he's licensed by the state, and it's immoral. It's against the law. It's bad. Wicked, terrible, awful, and evil for a preacher to marry people without a marriage license. And he'll get punished, and he knows that. And so he won't marry him. So I went up there and did that. And during the ceremony, I mentioned to these people, I know it was a couple hundred people there, and I mentioned to them that these people were marrying without a marriage license, and they wanted a patriarchal family, that they wanted to be married in a scriptural ceremony pursuant to the laws of God and Moses and so on. And three or four people just got up and walked out. I mean, they were offended. To think that these people were going to marry, and then claim to use the Bible as the standard by which they were going to perform this marriage and this marriage ceremony and bring little babies into a home like this, it so offended three or four of these people that got up and walked out. Imagine it. That's kind of embarrassing, you know, but wasn't embarrassing to me, but it was kind of the bride, because I think it was some of her relatives. Now, where did these people get the idea that a state marriage license is the bottom line to morality in marriage? Did Adam and Eve have a marriage license? And if so, who issued it? And where was it filed? In what courthouse or what county? When did marriage licenses come into vogue? You know, my great-granddad, he didn't have a marriage license. Does that make me a bastard? Because, excuse me, that's one of those bad words, bastard. Am I a bastard? Because, now, illegitimate's all right. See, if you use the word illegitimate, see, church lady and pulpit parrot, they could live with that. But if you use the word bastard, B-A-S-T-A-R-D, all of a sudden, that's a bad word. Why, that could get your mouth washed out with soap. So I began to wonder, why is it that the word bastard is a bad word? Who made that determination? Who said that that was a bad word? You ever stop and think about that? So I thought I'd look it up. Let's take a look at our first word here. Did you know that the word bastard appears in the Bible three times? Yeah, that's right. It occurs in Deuteronomy 23, verse 2, Zechariah 9, verse 6, that's twice in the Old Testament and once in the New. And then, of course, the word plural appears. You know, I'm just using the word singular, bastard. In Hebrews 12, verse 8, you'll see this word bastard. Well, you know, there's a lot of instruction in words. There's a lot of instruction in the Bible, and when you take a look at a word and you look up its meaning, you find out that sometimes a word means something different than what you thought that it meant. Like the word gay. See, when I was a kid and you said, well, I had a gay time at the dance last night, you know, we wouldn't think that you were a homosexual or that you were queer or a sodomite. We would think you were out having fun. But today, that word gay has a different connotation to it, doesn't it? But when you look it up in the dictionary, it hasn't changed. But the way we use that word gay has certainly changed. And the word hate, you know, 300-400 years ago, the word hate did not mean to despise. It meant to love less. I hate you. If I say to you, I hate you, you'd say to me, why, that's a word of total contempt. Why is it that you are so contemptuous of me? Whereas in reality, the word means to love less. I don't love you as much as I do Bob. I hate you more than Bob. So we need to first of all take a look at the word and ask ourselves, well, is there something innate about the word itself? Well, in the scripture, in Deuteronomy 23, verse 2, if you look it up in the Hebrew, it's translated from the Hebrew word 4464 in Strong's Concordance, and it means a mongrel, a crossbreed, a mulatto. Today, the word bastard means illegitimate. Illegitimate. And so when we say, well, that guy's a bastard, that means that his mother and father weren't married when he was born. Well, if you say to someone, why, you bastard, or he is a bastard, or you put an adjective in front of it and you say, well, you dirty bastard, why, that'd get your mouth washed out with soap, wouldn't it? When in reality, the word doesn't have anything to do with swearing, doesn't have anything to do with taking God's name in vain. And that's what they used to tell me when I was a little kid. If you use the word bastard, why, that's taking God's name in vain. It violates the third commandment. Now, that's preposterous. The word bastard doesn't have anything to do with God's name. There's no place in the scripture that ever identifies God, the Creator, the God of Abraham, or anybody, Yahshua or Allah or anybody else, with the term bastard. A bastard has two meanings. The second meaning is in Hebrews 12, verse 8, in the Greek, where it is used as illegitimate. So, for some reason, the King James translators, when they used the word bastard, which in English means illegitimate, the Hebrew word that was used, 4464, did not say that no bastard shall enter the congregation. It didn't say no illegitimate shall enter the congregation. It said no mongrel or crossbred shall enter the congregation. Totally different meaning, boys and girls. Totally. Now, if we're going to communicate, especially in law, words are very important. Because if you come into court and you use a particular word or a phrase or a term, and it has legal significance. Now, the one that's very simple is the word and or. Now, they have some legally significant distinctions here. You go into a bank and you open a checking account, and you open a joint checking account. And the signature card says George and Jackie Gordon. That means that the check is no good unless both George and Jackie sign it. So you have to have two signatures on the check. Whereas if the signature card says George or Jackie Gordon, then that means that either George Gordon or Jackie Gordon can sign the check. It only takes one signature, either or. So the word or and the word and make a very significant legal distinction between do we need two signatures or one signature on the check. So words are important. And I don't think that language is being taught in our public schools in a way that distinguishes the importance of the use and the meaning of the words used. Now, the King James translators did a pretty good job, I would say, on balance as you go through the scripture. But this is a flagrant mistranslation. Now, there's 172 mistranslations in the Bible. And Deuteronomy 23, verse 2, and Zechariah 9, verse 6, are two mistranslations from the Hebrew to the English. The translation in Hebrews 12, verse 8, the Greek word 3541, which means spurious or illegitimate, is translated correctly. But in Deuteronomy 23, verse 2, and Zechariah 9, verse 6, it's translated bastard, and it should have been translated mongrel, mulatto, or crossbreed, crossbred, so that you got the significance of the instruction. It says, no bastard shall enter into the congregation until the 10th generation. That has to do with breeding. King David came from a family of crossbred people. Judah had married a black woman by the name of Shua, And they had three sons, Onan, and Shelah, who were crossbred. They were mulattoes. And no mulatto, no crossbreed, could enter the congregation to the 10th generation. So says Deuteronomy 23, verse 2. Don't get mad at me now, because I didn't write that. I'm a reporter. I'm just reporting. And I'm giving you a little lesson here in grammar, in English, in meaning of words. And the King James translators translated that bastard, which means illegitimate. It had nothing to do with people being illegitimate. It had everything to do with these people's breeding. That's why my granny used to use the term, he comes from good breeding, or she comes from good breeding. It's like we do with cattle, you know. I have cattle, purebred Jersey cattle, and they come from good breeding. Then I got some crossbred mongrels out here. They come from bad breeding. That doesn't mean that they're wicked and evil. It means that genetically they're inferior to the purebreds. It doesn't mean that we don't kill them and eat them. It just means that when you go to sell them, they're worth about half as much money. That's what that boils down to. So I hardly think that the word bastard, which when I was a little kid 5 years old would get you knocked to the ground and your mouth washed out with soap, is really all that bad a word. Now, of course, now you can use it in a euphemistic way, and you can say, well, you dirty bastard, in a derogatory sense. But the word of and by itself, if I said, why, you dirty white man, or if I said, why you dirty American, you dirty Yankee, what would be the significance or the connotation there? Would he be saying, well, I'm dirty, I didn't wash my hands? Or would he say, you're dirty, that is, you're vile or morally impure? What's the purpose in using the adjective dirty? Well, there's the story. Now, let me give you the definition of bastard. Here it is from Webster's 1828 dictionary, where it says, a bastard over here is a natural child, a child begotten and born out of wedlock, an illegitimate or spurious child. By the civil and canon laws, a bastard becomes a legitimate child by the intermarriage of the parents at any future time. But by the laws of this country, as by those of England, a child to be legitimate must at least be born after the lawful marriage. And so there's a couple of three. There's a bastard here called a sweet wine. Did you know that there was a wine that is called bastard wine? And a file is also known as a bastard. You know, if you got a bastard in your toolbox. So I think that church lady and pulpit parrot have done us a disservice, along with my Aunt Bessie and my granny, by telling us that the word bastard is a bad word and you shouldn't use it. All right, let me take up another one over here. As we progress along, we'll take up some words that are really obnoxious. I mean, really, really obnoxious. Bad, bad words. Let me get this one over here, bastard, and circle that one off so we don't come back to it. There's another one over here. Let me see if I can find it. Number 12 here in my list, which is called ass. You ass. You ever heard somebody say that? How come I can't find it here after I mentioned it to you? See if I can. Well, I'll just point out to you while I'm looking for the word itself. I got a pile of papers here, and so we'll dig it out. When I was a kid, we used to use the word ass quite often, and if the word ass were to come up, then Judy Hartson would run in and she would yell and scream. She'd tell Mr. Witt, and Mr. Witt would get real excited, and he'd come out and he'd tell you that you'd committed a mortal sin, that this word ass is going to get you thrown into hell fire for eternity, and you're going to burn up because you're a bad boy because you've used this bad word. Generally, just so that you know, that the word ass is vulgar. Yes, it's vulgar. But vile or morally base, Does it implore sin, or is it of and by itself sinful? Well, it's used in the Bible 85 times. And an ass is a four-legged quadruped. Four-legged quadruped. So about the worst that you could say to somebody is that you're using the word incorrectly, or that you're applying the word to something that is improper. Okay, so, well, isn't that the way we're using the word gay today instead of using the word sodomite or lesbian? Do you get mad at people? You know, I notice that church lady calls people gay. They don't like to use the word sodomite or lesbian. They try to avoid it because it's not politically correct. Well, politically correct to who? Who says that it's politically incorrect? Who is it that's making the standard for us to follow? Is it the United States government? No, I got to tell you a little story. Did you know the United States government took over the Mustang Ranch whorehouse out in Nevada, up north of Reno, in a different county? I think it's Pershing County. Reno's in Washoe County, and I think the next county up is Pershing. And there's a place there alongside the road. You get off the road and go down across the Truckee River, and there's a whorehouse called Mustang Ranch. Well, they didn't pay their taxes, and so the IRS took it over, and they ran it for 16 months, and then they sold it to a new buyer. Now, here's the United States of America, the IRS, the author of morality, running a whorehouse for 16 months and then selling it. They tax it. Now, honest to God, boys and girls, do you believe that running a whorehouse is a moral institution? I mean, I don't know. You know, you tell me what's moral or what's immoral, but it would seem like to me that abortion isn't exactly moral, and that running a whorehouse isn't exactly moral. At least it isn't moral from the scriptural standpoint, is it? So I'm not sure that the United States of America is the place that we ought to go to find a standard of morality that we ought to follow. Now, many people do, and of course, that's their choice in life. I thought that the Bible would be a better source. Muslims think that the Quran is a better source of morality, and I think that's why the Muslims hate us so much. You know, we export our filth and perversity. Well, what they think, in their moral minds, is filth and perversity, and what we think is just kind of normal. I was watching a show on TV last night, and they had six or eight young women down in the audience, and all of these six or eight women were wearing the Levi's as tight as they could get around their bottoms, and they had a little flesh, you know, showing between their shirt and the top of their jeans, so they could show off their belly button. Now, that looked pretty sexually explicit and suggestive to me, being an old man and all. I just kind of looked at that and I said, you know, that doesn't strike me as being Pearl Pureheart there. Now, we call that in this country fashion. Over in Saudi Arabia and Iran and Iraq, those people over there call that filth and perversion. They call that sexually explicit. And they don't like it. And then they especially resent it, you know, when we're over there trying to peddle that. They don't like it. They think that, like my Aunt Bessie, that's pornographic. And the United States of America, of course, is over there trying to enforce upon the Iraqis over there a new form of government called democracy. And many of those people over there don't care much for that. Well, who is it that makes these determinations? Is it the majority of people? You know, 80 million Germans elected a guy named Adolf Hitler, and he said, well, here's the new form of morality that we Germans are going to follow. The French didn't buy into that. The English didn't buy into it. The Americans didn't buy into the new morality of Germany during the 30s and 40s. And so we fought this great war called World War II over this issue of morality. Stop and think about it. Weren't those Germans just as entitled to determine who lives and who dies? You know, that's moral or it's immoral. We thought that that was pretty immoral, killing people that way. And they thought, well, this is normal. This is a part of breeding. You know, we're going to determine the genetic lines for the future, at least here in Europe. Of course, a lot of people took exception to that. Now, when we get back here to the word ass, it's a quadruped of the equine genus. This animal has long slouching ears, a short mane, a tail covered with long hair at the end. He's usually of an ash color with a black bar across the shoulders. And the tame or domestic ass is patient to stupidity and carries a heavy burden. He's slow but very sure-footed. And for this reason, he's very useful on rough, steep hills. Okay, now that tells you what an ass is. And so we apply that description to people, and we say, well, you ass. Or we'll call somebody a horse's ass. Or it refers to the animal as well as to your butt or your buttocks. Now, if I said, why, you horse's buttocks, I suppose that would be politically correct. But it certainly takes away from the meaning of the phrase. You know, when we use the term you asshole or you horse's ass, and right away somebody says, oh my God, you are vulgar. So I took a minute and I said, well, let's look up the word vulgar. What does that mean? It means common, ordinary. Common, ordinary people use vulgar language. And the aristocracy, like my granny and my Aunt Bessie, or like pulpit parrot, a church lady, and Judy Hartson, they don't use vulgar language. But there's nothing of and by itself in the word vulgar that's wicked or evil or that is sinful or morally degenerate. It's the common, ordinary usage of the word. That's what vulgar means, common. And the common use of the word ass, today we would call him a donkey or a burro. The correct name is ass. We don't like to use the word ass because we connect that with being something that's less than politically correct. And of course, if you call somebody an ass, that's a derogatory term. If you call him an asshole, you have to be a truck driver. Or if you say to somebody, well, kiss my buttocks, takes away from kiss my ass. Or you've heard the term kicking butt. Well, butt, B-U-T-T, is simply a contraction of buttocks, which is the rear end. It's not your anus. Anus is the hole itself, the excretory hole. The buttocks is the hips that go around it. And for some reason, we seem to be enamored with anatomy. And we get real excited about that. Now, I'm not quite sure why it is that Janet Jackson's breast, when it's bared, is wicked and evil. But when Johnny Weissmuller bares his breast, it isn't. In fact, it wasn't too many years ago that when men, back in the 30s, I mean, you know, when I was a kid, when men went to the beach, they did not go without covering their chest. That occurred after World War II. And of course, women, we're getting more and more to the point where we want to reveal more and more. In Europe, it's common for women to go out on the beach bare-breasted. And then they wear a bikini, well, which is what we call in burlesque a G-string. You know, if you've ever been to a burlesque show, you know, I don't want to shock all you people out there, you know, but men go to burlesque shows. I remember when I was a kid, I went to a burlesque show or two. And I watched them undress, and after I watched that for a while, I said, you know, I don't think after I, you know, when you're 19 or 21, you know, of course that's exciting, but when you get to be a little older and you reflect on that and you say, well, is that really good? Is that something that I really want to do? I came to the conclusion that I didn't think that was very good, and I thought I'd stop doing it, but I have been there a time or two, and so on. I see these women today in the year 2005, and I look at them. You can't miss them. They're all over television. I mean, the advertisements on television are so pornographic. You couldn't play those ads 30 years ago on television. They wouldn't allow it. It's kind of like Saturday Night Live. See, Saturday Night Live today is pretty filthy, pretty explicit, pretty dirty. Now, 25 years ago, it wasn't. So there's been a shift in America. I've been around long enough that I can watch that. I can see the shift. See, when I was a kid, you went to the beach and men and women covered their chest. Today, in Europe, neither men nor women cover their chest, which means that they only want to cover their pubic hair and the surrounding territory. And it makes me kind of wonder, well, why is it that you want to cover up your pubic hair, but you don't want to cover up your nostrils or your ears? Now, there are certain orifices in the human body that excrete vile substances. Have you ever taken a look at the stuff that comes out of your ears? That's pretty vile-looking stuff, but we don't wear cloths over our ears to hide that orifice from people, do we? And our noses. Have you ever noticed the germs and the filth and the debris that comes out of your nostrils? I mean, you ever blow your nose into a handkerchief and then look at that snot that's hanging there on that rag and ask yourself, is this really something that I want to parade around in public and let people see? But I haven't seen anybody covering up their nose unless it's in the hospital, you know. Now, you know that that's pretty dirty, vile stuff because the surgeon covers up his nose and his mouth when he's operating on you. But then he takes that off and goes out into public showing off his bodily orifices, his ears and his nose and his mouth. But boy, is he real cautious and careful about covering up his pubic hairs on both ends. I don't know, it just doesn't quite make sense to me that women would want to run around wearing a G-string on the beach. I mean, hell, you might as well just take it all off. It's just another bodily orifice that has secretions that come out of it, isn't it? What is it about your penis or your vagina or your anus that's any different than your nostrils or your ears? But again, somebody came along and said, oh, that's really dirty and nasty. And I noticed that Adam and Eve came up with that. I think that's where that started. They went and made feet fig leaves and covered themselves. But it doesn't say what it was they were covering. Could it be that Adam and Eve made fig leaves to cover their mouths, nostrils, and ears? Nah, we know better than that, don't we? Why, they were out covering up their sex organs. And for some reason, we have this fixation on sex. I'm not quite sure why that is, but we certainly do have this fixation. And this fixation, we hang a label on it. If you use the wrong words to describe it, we call it vulgar. And then it's taking God's name in vain. And then it's a bad word. Then it's politically incorrect. And now they've got legislation called hate speech. I mean, you know, we Americans used to take pride in the fact that we had a thing in America called free speech. And we enshrined that in our Constitution. And we talk about free speech. I'm not so sure that we have so much free speech anymore. They want to label free speech as hate speech. That's because they don't like what they're hearing when you speak. So the word ass, A-double-S, used in the Bible 85 times in the singular, 64 times in the plural, may be vulgar in the way that it's used. But listen, if the word gay can be misapplied to a sodomite, then what's wrong with applying incorrectly the word ass with the word horse in front of it and use horse's ass, kiss my ass, or you asshole? Which is no worse use of the word or combination of words than gay to describe a sodomite, which isn't true at all, is it? All right. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, so don't blame anybody but me. And they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station, because they're all politically correct. I'm the only guy around here that's politically incorrect. Now, if you'd like more information about political incorrectness, you can call or write to the Law Hour and Editorial Review at our website. That's georgegordon.org. You can send us an email. Or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. So if you're driving down the highway right now and you say, God, I'd like to have this program, I want to send this to my Aunt Bessie or Judy Hartson, well, you can. You can go home, click on your computer, turn to our webpage, click on to the archives, and download this program on MP3. It's what the radio stations do. They just download it and then play it at their convenience. It's the way that's done. All right, let me remind you again that the following program contains adult material. Listener discretion is advised. You should not let your children listen to this program. Well, that's what they used to tell me when I was a kid, you know. Can't let a little kid watch something like this. It's too dirty. Well, I mentioned to you that there was a young fella came in here. Nice young guy. No pun intended here, but he asked me why I use these four-letter words, you know. Like, well, you can see, I spice up my speech every once in a while. I'm vulgar. I'm rude. I'm obnoxious. I never denied that. But I never did go to the teacher and say, you know, Judy Hartson said thus and such. I couldn't care less what Judy Hartson said. She was real concerned about what I said. I think she followed me around constantly, just waiting for me to say I didn't give a rat's ass whether she liked it or not, so that she could go report me to Mr. Witt or somebody else and get me into trouble so I'd miss recess. But vulgar isn't wicked and evil. It isn't scriptural or scripturally unsound doctrine to use some four-letter words. Now, I think that there are probably some words out there that might be a little bit beyond the pale, but if we go to the scripture, I think I can justify each and every one of these words that I use. And I can use them over the air. In fact, the Supreme Court has given us a little guide to go by. They say, well, does it have purient, is that the word, purient interest? Is that what it's for, to incite people's purient interest? Or does it have some kind of an academic purpose? Is there some redeeming social value that can come out of this free speech? So in case you're going to call the FCC and report me now and turn me in, I think there's some socially redeeming value in discussing bad words. I'm not going to use every bad word on the air. The FCC restricts me in some of the words that we're going to use, so I'm not going to be that explicit, but I'm going to use some of the common words over here that I can find in the dictionary, or I can find in the Bible, or that are used so commonly in society over here that Janet Jackson's breast becomes inconsequential, as I pointed out a little earlier. 75% of Americans, 75% of Americans are watching pornography. They have it piped right into their homes and they're paying a monthly fee to get it. Do you hear me? 75% of Americans pay money to get pornography piped into their house. Now, I get some pornography piped into my house, but it's not because I'm paying money. In fact, there's a couple of channels that we don't even watch. We got Warner Brothers, WB31, that comes in, and we don't watch that channel at all. Zero. Zilch. And that's broadcast right out over the airwaves. And then most of the programming on ABC, CBS, and NBC, we don't watch in this household because it's violent, it's perverted, it's sexually explicit, or there's some other reason, that there's something else that's wrong with it that's unscriptural. At least it's unscriptural in our narrow-minded frame of viewing the world, and we don't watch it here. Now, I watch the PBS channel, and there are some programs that we watch on the other channels, you know, that we think are reasonable. So I don't want you to think that I'm a Howard Stern, but by and large, on the other side of the coin over there, I'm not pulpit parrot either. So this guy asked me the question. He said, "Mr. Gordon, why do you use these four-letter words? You know, like a word piss or pissed off, or have you ever heard that term?" And I know I can see some of you people back there just recoiling in absolute horror. That's number 9 on my list over here. Now, we looked at the word bastard. We looked at the word ass. We looked at the word, now I want to take a look at the word piss, P-I-S-S. It refers to urine. Today, we would call this a bad word, such as piss on you, or piss against the wall, or I'm pissed off, or I have to go take a piss. Now, if I said, well, I have to urinate, that would be politically correct. Or if I said, well, urinate on you, I guess you wouldn't be offended at that. Or if I said, well, do you urinate against the wall? You probably could accept that. And it appears in the Bible 8 times. Did you know that? Did you know that the word P-I-S-S is an old English word that today we use as urinate? Now, when I went to school, when somebody raised his hand and the teacher said, yes, and then they would say, I have to go to the bathroom. And then the teacher would ask, number 1 or number 2? Because I guess they felt like it was something that was to be shameful, or you should be ashamed of the fact that you had to go urinate or defecate. And so we didn't use those words. I guess when you're in the first and second grade, you can't pronounce the word urinate. So we would use the word pee, P-E-E, and we'd have to go pee. Or I've got to go big. You have to go big. And I thought that was kind of peculiar, because here in our home, we always taught our children, you know, by the time they could talk, you know, a kid that can start saying words, you know, they can learn how to say urinate and defecate. And so our children learned these bodily functions at an early age. I don't know, just call me nutty or whatever. My wife's a nut. And we thought they could, and so sure enough, they could, and they did. And so we never taught our children to go pee or wee-wee or go number 1 or go number 2. We taught them to go urinate, or I have to go to the bathroom, or I have to defecate, or I have to eliminate. These are words that we use to describe what we're ashamed of. And I'm sitting here wondering, well, what is it that's so shameful about it? And why is it that the word piss, which is vulgar, it's common. It's what truck drivers do. See? Now, good people, that is people that go to college and get degrees after their name, they don't piss. They urinate. Truck drivers piss. And King David pissed against the wall. Now, just to show you how this word has been maligned by my Aunt Bessie and my granny, if I were to use that word piss, why, you could guarantee that you were going to get your mouth washed out with soap. I mean, there just wasn't any doubt about it. That's a dirty word, and a dirty word has to be cleansed. You have to be cleansed of this sin. And it was akin to taking God's name in vain. Again, I couldn't understand for the life of me what this had to do with God's name. We'll get to the word God here in a little while. But piss appears in the Bible 8 times, in 2 Kings 18:27 and Isaiah 36 verse 12. It's used many, many times in the scripture to describe this bodily function that all men do. Now, for you ladies, in case you're surprised at all of this, all you have to do is go into the men's washroom. You got to just test this sometime. Just go into the men's bathroom. And you're going to find that men are different than you ladies. And when we urinate, we don't sit down on a toilet. We go over and we piss against the wall. I mean, I know it sounds kind of crazy, but that's what men do. And they do it to this day. And over here in Isaiah 36, verse 2, I'll just read you this statement out of the Bible so that you can see I'm not lying to you too much. 36, verse 2, it says, "And the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem unto King Hezekiah with a great army. And he stood by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the Fuller's Field." See if I got the right scripture here. Did I get that? Isaiah 36, 12. It's in verse 12 is where I'm going here with this. So here come the Assyrians against the Israelites over here. And in verse 12 is the word I'm looking for, but this gives you a little background to it. And this guy, Rabshakeh, he said, "Has my master sent me to your master and to you to speak these words? Has he not sent me to the men that sit upon the wall, that they may eat their own dung and drink their own piss with you?" Now that's a pretty vulgar way to use that word, isn't it? He said, "I'm sent here, and you're going to eat your own dung and drink your own piss." Now, that's in the Bible. Now, I know church lady and pulpit parrot are going to be offended by this. That's why I suggested to you that the following program contains adult material and listener discretion is advised. Church lady, pulpit parrot, and little children shouldn't hear this. Or put another way, I think maybe your little children probably ought to listen to this and let the pulpit parrots and the church ladies go hide their heads in shame, because this is probably too strong a language for them to hear. The other places are in 2 Kings 18:27, Isaiah 36:12, 1 Samuel 25:22, and verse 34, 1 Kings 14:10, 16:11, and 21:21, and 2 Kings 9, verse 8. I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to cut it off right there. We covered 3 here today. We've got a couple 3 more we'll cover tomorrow. So remember, tomorrow, if you want to listen to bad words over the radio, this is the place you want to be. You've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, we're out of time. That's my signal. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.